Now imagine one day you wake up as a founder and you no longer own majority of your company because of something you didn't pay a lot of attention to called dilution. It sounds crazy, but it actually happens. It even happens to legendary founders like Steve Jobs, like Travis Kalanick of Uber. So it's not as much of a thing as experience, but the fact that it can really sneak up on you. If this is your first time, this is a Startup Leap where we talk about the real talk, real lessons from founders who've taken the leap. We are going to be talking about dilution today.
So we see this mistake all the time. And I have invested in over 100 startups, and we've seen founders scale too fast, raise too much, and suddenly, boom, no longer able to make the decision at the stage where they need to. So today we're going to break down what dilution is and a simple example of how it works. We're also going to share a real life founder story of dilution costing them their company, including Steve Jobs, as Maria mentioned. And we're going to share a founder dilemma facing a dilution problem and provide some advice on that too. So let's dive into it.
So this is a founder dilemma. Am I losing my company? By the way, if you have a dilemma and you want us to answer it on the show, the link to do so is in the show notes, or you can just send us an email at thestartupleappod@gmail.com. That's thestartupleappod@gmail.com. So subject, am I losing my company? Hey, Maria and Yvonne, thank you for your amazing content. I'm learning a lot. So I'm at a crossroads with my startup. We launched 3 years ago, bootstrapped for 6 months, and raised a 1 million seed round for 20% equity. Now we have traction, revenue, and a 10 million Series A term sheet offer. Okay, sounds amazing, right? Here's a problem. After dilution from our seed round, my co-founders and I now own 70% of the company. The Series A investors want 35% of the company, which will drop our ownership down to 45%. The investors also want 2 out of 3 of our board seats, which means we'd lose board control. I've heard horror stories of founders getting pushed out, like Noah Glass, Twitter, Steve Jobs, Apple. Am I heading towards the same fate? Should we take the deal despite the dilution? How do I protect myself while still raising money?
Oh, that's a tough one. And honestly, this is exactly how many founders lose control of their company without even realizing it's happening. So stick around, because we're going to come back to this after we explain how dilution works.
So how does dilution work? So let's break this down very simply with a story. Imagine you start a company called, let's say, BizTax, an app that helps businesses file taxes. Given it's tax season, it's probably appropriate. And at launch, you own 100% of the company, obviously, because you incorporated it and you've not sold any shares. And at that time, the startup has 100 shares of $1 each. So 100 times one, $100 is pretty much the capitalization of the company, and you own 100% of it. Your company value at that time is $100. Obviously, 100 again times $1. Now, fast forward, you bootstrap BizTax, it grows, you have revenue, you have customers, you have a strong product. Because you bootstrapped, you just kind of like put your money into it and didn't necessarily raise external funding. And now your company is valuable, is growing, it's definitely worth much more than you did initially when it was 100. What happens next?
So you decide to raise money to expand, and you need funding to hire a team, market in a new region, and really scale. Investors are interested too. So you issue 200 new shares at a share price of £2 or $2 per share to raise $400 of fresh new capital.
Remember, you had $100 with $1 per share, and now you added 200 new shares that you're issuing, essentially creating new shares to sell to investors. Now, add that 100 and 200, you now have 300 shares in total in your company. You've tripled the number of shares from 100 to 300. 100 the original amount and 200 the newly issued shares. Now, even though your company is technically worth more money, because let's say you now have 300 new shares and you had $2 per share, so it's worth $600, 300 times 2 from your original $100. Even though it's worth more over the round, your ownership has just dropped from the original 100% you had to 33% of the company. You previously owned 100% worth, and now you own 33% of a company worth $600.
That's a lot of dilution.
It's crazy. It's actually absolutely crazy, because you never really know till you do the math. And that's the crazy thing about dilution. You don't know till you do the math, because if you do mental math, you think you're fine. But then after, you're like, that's crazy. Yeah. You bring in capital, but then you lose a bit of ownership in the process. So yeah, that's a simple idea of how dilution works.
And that's the kicker, right? If you don't manage it carefully, you can lose complete control. And so this is something which is so, so key. Don't just do the mental maths, get your Google Sheets and map it all out.
Absolutely. So now back to our founder's dilemma, Yvonne.
What should they do?
Recap, they got $10 million to grow, but they lose majority control from the board and they lose board and the startup because they go from 70 in the C to 45%. So now they own less than 50 and they also give away 2 out of 3 board seats. So what do you think they should do, Yvonne?
Negotiate your board seats. So even if investors get 2 seats, try and get a neutral party to be a tiebreaker, essentially. And I think what a lot of founders actually really don't think about is having an external individual who's maybe an industry expert that can really bring that real experience within the particular space they're operating in to come in and bring value to the board. Most boards typically have investors around the tables alongside the founders, but you can actually have external advisors too. So really consider that in terms of having a neutral party within the mix.
Absolutely. And also just checking that the valuation for your stage is standard, right? Because when you compare valuation with the amount of money you're raising, that's essentially the percentage of your company you're giving away. It's important to contextualize it to your industry, to what's the norm for your industry and for your stage. So I would check in on the valuation and the amount you're raising. Maybe you need to raise lower and don't have as much dilution, or you need to raise at a higher valuation. And then also, explore alternative funding, right? Like, can you hold out with revenue for a few more milestones so that your valuation could go up and you could limit that dilution? Can you raise part of the money from non-dilutive funding of some sort, revenue-based financing, grants? Or explore ways to either increase your valuation or reduce the need of the capital that you need.
Ultimately, those terms for standard ventures seems pretty aggressive, but I think one thing that founders should also consider is having founder protections. So you can have founder lock-in voting rights or dual share classes, as we shared in the previous episode with Mark Zuckerberg, where he had dual share classes and that enabled him to have control with some respect.
Absolutely. So now we're going to go to the next part of the conversation, which is Steve Jobs, a real lesson, a real founder story, how Apple took his company away. So yeah, sit back, relax, and we will get into it in the next section.
So now let's talk about Steve Jobs, founder of Apple. Now, we all have Apple devices. I mean, I have an Apple phone, I have an Apple laptop, I have an Apple watch. Everything is Apple, right? So, you know, this is a company that's had like a major impact on the world that we live in today. If we talk about Steve Jobs' journey as a founder, see, he obviously owned a huge stake when he started out the company, but Apple raised significant amount of capital in its early days and his ownership was heavily diluted. So by 1985, Apple's board had grown to a position of much more strength than Steve Jobs had himself. What that ultimately led to was him being fired from his own company. At the time he was fired in 1985, he only owned 11% of shares and he lost control. He ended up selling down the remainder of his shares and he was left with reportedly 1% just out of frustration. But I think that just goes to show the impact of too much dilution, in that he was fired because he ultimately had no say when it came to that decision being made. And so again, it just goes to show how important dilution can be. And so again, just coming back to how important dilution is and why you should be thinking about it as you start your company and every single fundraise. And if you check out one of our previous episodes, Elizabeth, founder of As a Finance, she actually shared how she would have done things differently if she was raising again in the earlier days of the company, because she was overly diluted in those early days. Listen to this segment where she goes into it.
How did you think about distribution equity in those early days?
This is a very touchy subject because, like, when we started, we got this check from this, like, rando investor guy who was giving out 50K checks. Later on, I realized he was only giving out 50K checks to women. Mm. I'll let it there. Let that go there for another podcast. But at the time, I was like, cool, you know, all right. And he's like, yeah, if you do something with Bitcoin, I have one in health, one in fintech, one in Bitcoin. So we were like, yoink, took that check and ran with it in our own way. I don't think he realized how self-possessed Charlene and I were. And we had more than enough on our own to do it. So we just did it our own way. And he did a 60-40 split.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then my ex-husband at the time said, you should be lucky you got that.
Oh, no. Okay.
That was the mental space I was living in then.
Oh. Is it like...
Give me a crumb.
At the time, did that come off as odd to you? Or was it like, oh, we just need it? Or was it more, yeah, no red flags?
I had been raised in investment banking. I expected no good treatment. I had no idea of my self-value at the time. I was at rock bottom. I had just had two kids right in a row within 13 months in a foreign country without any support, with working in microfinance, which is not a wealthy job. And a lot of the consulting jobs that I was up for were telling me no because I was pregnant all the time. And though they would come to me, I've talked about this a lot, they'd come to ask me to give a presentation to their new office. Can I meet you for lunch? Can I pick your brain? Over and over and over and over again. How about you send me that spreadsheet? Until finally I got wise to it. And my best girlfriend, who just pinged me coming into here, was like, you're a diamond in the rough. She's from New York too. It's my neighbor in Nairobi. She said, stop giving away your intelligence for free. And you could do this. So I really thought I had a low value. And I think that's just, you know, story of my life. Every time I get somewhere, I'm like, oh, I can go more. I can go more. Oh, well, I can go more. And every year of this business, we were like, Charlie and I would like hold hands and be like, we could do it. And, you know, let's try to channel the confidence, the guys who are starting these companies.
Yeah, that's crazy. And I think she actually had to recapitalize later. So just a note to everyone, especially if you're in your early stages, be very careful of that part of giving out too much too early and being overly diluted, because you often might have to recapitalize. But that was just insane. I mean, if the legendary Steve Jobs wasn't immune to dilution, I think that just hints at something, that dilution in a sense is almost inevitable. If you're going to grow a massive company, you are going to need to invite people in to have the conversation. Strategic alignment is important. And the awareness that you could potentially lose decision-making power, even if you actually have some ownership. If you're in the minority, you could be fired as a CEO, remain as a shareholder, but not be able to influence the direction of your company. And this didn't also just happen to Steve Jobs. It also happened to Travis Kalanick of Uber. During that time, if you were keeping up with the news, when Uber was in the news a lot, there was a delete Uber campaign. There was some sexism in the company because a software engineer wrote a scathing PR article about being sexually harassed in the company. And then there was the driver incident. So there was a lot of pressures left, right, and center from the board on Travis. And he was pressured to step down after lots of all these issues. And he did eventually, and actually stepped down completely, not even temporarily. And even on the Steve Jobs story, he actually made an epic comeback. So it's possible to still come back, because the truth is, it's hard to run a company without the founder, especially in the earliest stages. So Steve Jobs, and being the visionary that he was, made an epic comeback in 1997 and turned the entire company around. But this is just to show how important dilution can be and how board control both can actually define whether or not you stay on in the business just as much as equity. Okay, we are now going to talk about how to protect yourself as a founder. So stick around.
So now we're going to talk about how you protect yourself as a founder. Now we're going to share four main ways that you should really think about from the very early stages. First of all, you want to understand your equity, know how much ownership you're giving away. You can be so fixated on the valuation, but actually you should really think about ownership and dilution at every single stage of your fundraising journey. Ensure that when you are raising funding, particularly in those earlier stages, you're not giving away too much, because it will have significant implications when you get to the Series A stage and beyond. I think the other thing is just negotiate for control when it comes to board seats, super voting shares, veto rights. Don't just focus on the money that's coming in, but focus on the implications of overall cap table formation and so on. And check out our previous episode where we shared more insights on this in particular.
Yeah, I think you've touched on a lot. The only thing I would add is just be aware of overraising. The more you raise, the more you give up pieces away of your business. Really raise only what you need and try to get the healthiest valuation possible. Notice I said healthy, not the highest nor the lowest, healthiest. And that can mean very different things in the context of your startup. And also, the truth is, at the end of the day, investment might seem like a point in time decision, but it's very long term. Think about the implication of the type of investors you're bringing on board, because the truth is, sooner or later, No one owns 100% of their company forever, especially if you're trying to grow and you're trying to make it bigger than you are. So really bring mission aligned people on board. There's mutual trust and there's an alignment of vision. So I guess this is all to say, dilution is not necessarily bad. It's important to grow. But if you're not careful, you might wake up one day and realize that the company isn't yours anymore. And like Yvonne said earlier, do not do the mental math in your head. Actually calculate it, run scenarios, break it down, do the math, because a lot of founders underestimate how much dilution they're getting per time, especially if you're raising on convertible notes like SAFEs or ASAs. It's hard to track. So really, really pay attention to the number, to knowing exactly how diluted you are per time.
So if you're a founder, keep a tracker. I know some founders actually at the very early stages think about the kind of dilution they want to have at every round. And of course, this is by no means the thing that's going to happen, because obviously it will depend on negotiation with investors at every stage and so on. But just having some sort of idea around how much you want to raise in the immediate future, but then also thinking about how much you think potentially want to raise in following rounds is just good practice. I think the other thing is explore non-dilutive options where they are available. This is not going to apply to every company. Just think about potential impact of that, to explore alternative options that are available, and be careful about board seats as well. They have a lot of power, but ultimately you do want to remain accountable, but ensure that it's not at a cost to you.
Absolutely. So that's it, folks. If this episode was helpful, drop a comment, share this with a founder, hit subscribe, because 75% of you are actually not subscribed. We see this on the 75%, isn't that crazy?
Thanks for sticking to the end of this episode, The Startup Leap. See you next time.
See you next.
Leave a review. Tell us what you think of this episode on all our platforms at The Startup Leap Pod. Do you have a question? Ask us and we'll ask our guest. Go to thestartupleap.io. See you next time.